Rachel Cochrane. I'm at Hartlepool Central Library, where I've been working with the writing group here to develop creative work and produce a podcast as part of the Crossing the Tees Book Festival 2015.
It runs from the 3rd to the 20th of June in venues across the region. All the details of times and prices and how to book are available at www.crossingthetees.org or pick up a brochure from your local library. All Aboard. Written by Wayne Cook, read by Denise Sparrowhawk. This is the story of working men travelling to their first shift at the shipyard on a crowded ferry. Inspired by a photograph of men marching en masse through Haverton Hill to cross the Tees to work. Slowly they marched, dirty heavy boots stomping the boards as they made their way quietly to the front of the boat. Each space steadily and wearily filled by the mass of bodies converging onto its decks, ready for the shift ahead. Dirty boiler suits and overalls were the uniform of the day now, no longer the khaki breeches and the itchy jackets of His Majesty's Armed Forces that had last trudged these decks, ready to fight for king and country, but the masses who had returned, desperate for a return to normality and a working life, away from the bullets and shells of the war. Today was their first day, a day of supposed joyfulness, as boys who had become men returned home safely. But little sound was heard from the men as they squeezed themselves into the last tight spaces, ready for the short journey across the dock, to rivet and weld the next generation of steel vessels in the shipyards that lay minutes away. Each man carried his own little bag, containing his lunch of sandwiches, and if he was lucky, a fresh pie straight from the oven. From the back of the boat, all that was visible was a sea of flat caps and the backs of heads as the bodies below wriggled themselves free of another, hoping to capture themselves a little extra space to breathe away from the overpowering smell of carbolic soap and hair cream. As the last men boarded, the gangway was pulled ashore and the deck rail secured. The engines began to vibrate powerfully as the paddle steamer found its rhythm. The blades at the back of this stern wheeler, a single paddle wheel mounted on the back of the boat, began their pounding of the surface, each rotation thrashing at the water below to drive it onwards. As it pulled away from the moorings, the men who were all stood were jerked backwards and then forwards by the motion, like a field of daffodils blowing in the spring breeze. The journey took minutes, but the thick, acrid smoke from the engines choked the throats of the men as they tried to find the last remnants of fresh air that circulated. The wind from the open seas whipped their faces, causing them to huddle together, closer like penguins, braving the Arctic conditions. As they approached the dock, fatigue already kicking in, they looked forward to the return, to the hot bath, already run and ready to jump into, followed by tea on the table at 5 p.m. on the dot. Nobody arrived to welcome them, no flag waving or bunting flying from the port as the steamer made its way steadily inwards. Forwards they streamed in their hundreds, lined up regimentally in rows of 10 and 12, like a parade drill, marching, heads held high, chests out, through the factory gates.
A poem based on the picture of a garden door marked private. This door, bleached as a ghost, this door, set in blocks of stone, this door, blistered by many suns, will never be opened. Is a door which can never be opened. World, you can only stand at my gate and knock. Only I. One flick of my forefinger, the sneck clicks up, and a gentle nudge, the door, unresisting, swings outward. In my mind, tumblers trip, cogged numbers spin, bolts slide from sockets. But I have heard the woman's howl muted to sobs, the drubbing heels of the hanging man, the seesaw of the siren louder, suddenly stilled, the wail from the child's mouth dribbling toxin. Open this door, and all my content dispersed. Thin as a mist of molecules, not balm enough to heal these hurts. Private, to me, reads not as a warning, nor a demand, nor an order, just a polite appeal to my nature. It's not really your business beyond this door.
The Helm Wind, written and read by Mavis Farrell. After 17 years at sea, he was going home. He had sent them letters, but not knowing where he would be, he could never give them an address to reply. He carried little, just as when he left, only this time he was rich, not destitute. Beneath his cambric shirt, a money belt wrapped his muscular body. No man could take it from him. Smiling as he thought of his parents and the warm cottage he would buy for them, he set off northeastwards along the banks of the Tees. He could have ridden home in style, but he wanted to return as he had left, on foot, following the river. Tall but lacking muscle, his voice just deepening, he had longed to escape the desolate winters when the Helm Wind shrieked over Cross Fell, taking livestock and the souls of those who tried to eke out a living on the highest of all the North Pennines. He hated the snow, lying as late as July. He hated the loneliness, the isolation, and the poverty. Having nothing else, his father had given him a blessing. His mother and sister kissed him and wept. He would follow the Tees River from its birth on the bleak moor through 85 meandering miles to the great German Ocean. Without a backward glance, he passed Cauldron Snout, where malevolent spirits brewed their potions. He followed the angry river over black basalt rocks to the greatest waterfall of all, the High Force. The boy made his way towards Middleton, not knowing this part of Teesdale was the most beautiful place in all England. He wanted only to be rid of it and find better. The dale widened, becoming more interesting as he crisscrossed the river over every bridge. Stopping to catch his food with snare or line, the journey took 11 days, but the weather warmed as he went further eastwards towards the sea. When the nights closed down on him and the river mist swirled, he thought he could see the face of Peg Powler, who was said to inhabit the river. As the water growled over the rocks, he could hear the grind of her teeth. Joined by many tributaries, the River Tees became great, snaking the expansive plains in large meandering curves until she became tidal. Passing the docks of Middlesbrough, he begged passage on a single-masted coaster to Whitby, where he joined the whaling fleet. Retracing his boyhood steps on the way home, he became enlightened by the beauty of Teesdale. How could he not have seen it? How could he not have known? In Middleton, he stayed the night at the coaching inn, drinking rum with a man he had known as a boy when they had brought down the sheep from the fells to the mart. Devastated, he learned that his parents had moved out 3 years ago with other hill farmers, unable to withstand the hardship of another winter. Nobody could tell where they had gone, but he decided still to visit his childhood home. Climbing through the juniper woods, he heard the raging of High Force as water cascaded over receding rocks to crash 100 feet to the maelstrom below. The sky sparkled with a million diamond drops, creating a rainbow. In the spray, he quite clearly saw the face of Peg Powler. Through her twisted lips and black teeth, she hissed and mocked him. The red sun raced westward as he reached the derelict farm on the slopes of Cross Fell. The yard was empty of livestock, and the barn roof slateless. House windows closed and shuttered. Moss and lichens carpeted the step his ancestors had worn low. Kneeling to peer through the keyhole of the locked door, He could see the key and knew, with foreboding, the door was locked from within. Taking an axe from the barn, he split the door jamb, shouldering the door back to let the evening light fill the room. His sister, triumphant, smiled a sepia smile from a picture frame shrouded in dust. In her arms she held a baby, and beside her stood a man and a sturdy boy. Turning back the mouldy cover on his parents' bed, they lay close, arms entwined, skulls touching, skeletal fingers caressing each other. Throughout the night, the helm wind screamed through his dreams, bringing Peg Powler to leer at him. The next morning, he drank from the spring and climbed to the summit, where in the clear morning light he could see Eden Valley and to the north the Solway Firth and the southern uplands of Scotland. He gathered blue gentians and mountain pansies, starry saxifrage and forget-me-not. These he scattered over the remains of his parents before nailing shut the door and turning back to the teas.
Crossing the Threshold by Irene Stiles. Imagine the steep white face of a cliff dappled with light and shadow from overhanging trees. Leading up to the top is a stone staircase with metal handrail. At the end of these steps is a dark black opening. Can you imagine what looms beyond this threshold? Pain has awoken me. I hope it will end soon. I know I must prepare myself for a journey. In the distance, a white cliff comes into view. It is dappled with sunlight, where the overhanging trees allow sunlight through, chasing the shadows of black leafy fingers. The top of the cliff is made easy to reach, even for my weary legs, by an iron-railed stone staircase. At the very top, I can see a bright blue sky peeping through the overhanging trees and shrubbery. This greenery casts eerie shadows that shimmer against the white rock as tantalizing flashes of light break through, giving contrasting moments of darkness, then light. It is almost hypnotic. The darkness signifies the unknown. The light, hopefully, my guide through this brooding, dark doorway set above me. I can hear the breeze rustling the leaves and caressing my face as it gently wafts by. I can smell the lushness of the forest around me, and far off in the distance, I can faintly, ever so faintly, hear the whisper of the sea, its waves lapping some unknown shore, and a seagull cries. I know now why I am here. I know it is almost time to climb up to that door, but it is worrying and foreboding. What will I find on the other side? I begin to ascend the steps with apprehension, counting out each stone slab as I go, compelled to get to the top. Once there, I stand before the entrance. It is so very dark. I edge forward and peer anxiously into that darkness. I place one foot over the threshold, and at once I see, way, way back, a spot of light. I take a few more steps. The light is brighter, so much brighter. It is filling my whole being, and I hear voices, welcoming voices, voices that I recognize and love. I take one last glance behind me. All pain and suffering is there. Another step, and it is gone. I am home.
Coming Home, written and read by Michelle Birbeck. Sea air reminded him of home,
For many a year now he had wandered America, and during that time his longing for the smell of smog and salt never ceased. Even his illusion of the police had not dismissed that desire. Home, however, was a place he could never return, not when the bodies he had left were still being trotted out on each anniversary. Leaving England had been the preferred alternative to the noose. But now the North promised the thrill of life slipping away by his hands. No one here knew him, though all knew of his work. His heart raced with the possibility of his work being recognised. Home, he thought, was where the heart stops, and Jack the Ripper had returned.
One Day, written and read by Denise Sparrowhawk. The door, a modern door, half glass with diamond leading, made to look old, looking out over an empty beer garden with the castle, the sea and grey skies in the distance. The interior is dark and the door is ajar. The first tourists had started to arrive. Their cars pulled smugly into parking spaces so early in the day. Later there would be more of them, frazzled, touring the town in search of a space, especially if the weather brightened. Looking out across the bay, the castle dark against the grey skies, it was hard to imagine that the day would brighten at all. It was hard really to think that another May was already upon them. Before long, the little town would be awash with tourists, bursting with excitement and enthusiasm, laden with fractious children, grumbling grandparents and tourist information. Very soon, there would be little time to stare at the view and dream. There would be endless drinks to serve, meals to cook, rooms to clean. A sudden gust of wind tugged at the door, opening it a few inches, just enough to allow in a brief, tantalising breath of air, heavy with the sweet scent of new-mown grass and the tang of sea spray. With it came the sound of waves crashing on the shore and a gull shrieking as it wheeled overhead. A tentative thought surfaced. Today, maybe today, would be the day to step outside. Almost as soon as the thought was formed, the wind dropped and the door clashed back on its hinges, clattering the glass in its frame and shattering the dream.
This podcast was sponsored by the Four Library Services and Arts Council England.